say the motion passes?
Maybe they should have off-the-record objections.
Is that me? All right, motion, what?
Just off-the-record objections, we have my...
No, we're not entertaining any off-the-record objections. So, motion passes, and Representative Gilliam and myself are appointed as co-chairs, and thank you very much. It's been an absolute pleasure to serve in this capacity for the past few years, and I'm very, very proud of the work that we've done. So, with that, who is on the phone joining us?
Linda Kirschbaum with Oregon Healthcare Association.
John Wentworth with the Clackamas County District Attorney's Office.
Okay.
Jerry Cohn, AARP Oregon.
Michelle Bassey, Attorney at Springfield, Oregon.
Okay, anyone else?
Intern for Fed Field.
Okay. Anyone else? No. Well, welcome. And why don't we just go around the table, introduce yourselves so that the people on the phone can know who's here.
Jeff Brandon, I'm with the Governor's Commission Senior Services.
Grover Simmons, Adult Foster Home Industry.
Jeff Aiken, Department of Human Services.
Betsy Steinberg, Pioneer Trust Bank.
Megan Moyer, Service Employee International Union.
Melissa Steinberg, Legislative Council's Office.
Joe Greenman, Oregon Healthcare Association.
Susan Gravy, Oregon State Bar.
Laura Johnson, Representative of the Elder Law Committee of the Oregon State Bar.
Matt Smith, Forest Grove Police.
Fred Steele, Department of Human Services.
Annie Jimenez, House Majority Intern.
Lindsay Baker, House Majority Office.
Jenna Newell, Committee Services.
Senator Tim Canope.
We already introduced ourselves. So with that, I'll entertain adoption of the work group rules.
Chair Hoyle, I move to adopt the proposed work group rules dated January 16, 2014.
Senator Canope moves to adopt the proposed work group rules dated January 16. Is there any discussion? Excellent. Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll. Can we just do this by acclamation?
Yep.
So there's no, does anyone have issues with the rules? No? So we'll adopt the rules by acclamation. Motion passes and the rules are adopted. Okay. So we'll close the organizational meeting and open an informational meeting to review LC 62. But before that, I would like Senator Canope to talk to the group about his bill on the Silver Alert program, which is pretty exciting.
So it's LC 130, and it just so happens that the Alzheimer's Association was able to work with me during the last few months, and we came up with a draft. And so sections 1 through 4 of LC 130 have to do with the Silver Alert. And because we only have two drafts that we can put in, the best bill last session not to pass, which is a bill that dealt with Medicaid fraud, is also part of LC 130. LC 130, as it relates to the Silver Alert, essentially have a recovery program for them, to recover them and get them back to their home, their relatives, their loved ones, as safely and efficiently as possible. And it gives them about a year to do that. We've worked with the state chiefs of police and also the Sheriff's Association, as well as other stakeholder groups. The chiefs of police and the Sheriff's Association are in support of the LC at this time. And obviously, once it's introduced, we want to hear from the general public and any other stakeholder groups that might have an interest in the concept. So I think it's a great concept. Oregon is one of 10 states that doesn't have a statewide plan on how to do a Silver Alert. There are individual entities and agencies that have them, Some of them are written, some of them aren't. There's been some training in some, not in others. So we're looking for basically a statewide plan, every entity having those plans, and then coordinating when a senior or a vulnerable adult goes missing.
So, Senator, do you know what the fiscal impact would be?
We don't think there's going to be a significant fiscal impact because it's basically going to be time in the communities with the sheriff and the chief of police meeting, getting together. But we're hoping that fiscal would either give us a minimal or a no impact, but we won't know that until we actually get the bill filed and they give us the actual
fiscal impact.
Potential.
Well, thanks for that work. We opened an informational meeting, and so I'm going to explain the work of the subgroup, our subgroup that met. We met multiple times, and Belisa was just incredible in redrafting all of the different ideas that came through, and so we appreciate that. Effectively, what the LC does is it directs DHS to develop a plan to standardize reporting tools and protocol, standardize investigations, standardize coordination with local law enforcement, and develop a long-term care worker registry, and bring a plan to the legislature in 2015. It also directs DHS to standardize background checks of long-term care agencies through the background check unit, and adds adult foster homes to the definition of a facility. Now, we met a number of times, and we discussed that things that were controversial, we knew in February we were going to be limited in terms of what we could do. So we wanted to keep things moving, have the work group continue, make sure that we were getting something done. And we had a lot of ideas on the table. But these were the things that we could agree on. So this is the LC that is being proposed that we accept to move forward. There was another proposal by some of the work group members to ask if we could reconsider some work with definitions. Because what our work group was going to do is look at the definition of what is abuse. And so we're going to take a look at that and potentially amend the bill if we get agreement among our work group to make that recommendation for going forward. And those recommendations we'll bring back to this to the larger group. But for right now, this is the LC, and this is what we will be working with, and then meeting with the subgroup, and we'll come back to the larger group as we get agreement and recommendations. So with that, are there questions? Yes.
Representative. Gail Minor, I'm the criminal defense lawyers, and I apologize. We do have a member who's not here, and he's in trial, and so I haven't been able to confer with him. I just was hoping maybe for a little bit of clarification on one point, and I'm looking on page 4 and 5, dealing with the right of an adult foster care home to pursue transfer, discharge a resident without reasonable advance notice if they are on probation, parole, or post-prison supervision for a sex crime. I just simply have two clarifying points. As I read this, this applies only to adult foster care homes, and I don't know if there's a corresponding right for long-term care facilities or residential care facilities to do the same. If there isn't, then I'm seeing nods. There is the same right. Okay, thank you. That's what I needed to know. I didn't know why that was getting pulled out just as an adult foster care home. And my second question was going to be whether there was any input from community corrections directors, because they supervise these guys, but if there's already the same parallel right to keep these guys out in other facilities, apparently they know how to manage that situation. So, okay.
Yeah,
I mean, so the this section, and it was passed in 2005 initially to apply to nursing facilities, residential care facilities, and assisted living facilities. This proposal is to include adult foster homes, which my understanding has always been it was an oversight to exclude them in 2005.
Okay. Thanks. Thank you.
If you can, if you're going to speak up for the folks on the phone, identify. I think it'll be helpful.
Okay, and for those on the phone, this was Fred Steele.
Okay. Other questions, comments? Yes.
Yeah, and I guess I did want to ask, again, Fred Steele, for those on the phone, what the process, do we want to talk about a couple potential changes that are needed or just for some clarifications? Definitely, I think the bill and the concept reflects what we had talked about for the most part. Just a couple, in some instances, a few nuances of it seems to only apply to the nursing facilities, and I didn't know if we had intended. So for Section 1 in particular about the technologies, I assumed the intent was to include the other facilities as well. So, you know, ORS, you know, a reference to ORS Chapter 124 for the elder abuse broadly. And so that was for the technologies and what would be required. The section did talk about as well, the first part of Section 1, about the DHS adopting rules to be able to carry out essentially kind of research and analysis. And I didn't know if that was entirely necessary to adopt rules to do this work and still get the report back as required by Section 2, January 1st, 2015. So I didn't know if that was something from Ledge Council that might have had a particular...
Can you speak a little louder?
Yeah, I don't have a microphone. So.
The microphones are not plugged into the telephone. They're merely for recording.
Oh.
Oh. Okay. Where is the phone then?
Right here.
Oh, okay. I'm way over on the other side of the boat. I'll try and speak a little bit louder. I think we can certainly remove rules, and I don't think it would impair the LC at all, especially if this is going to just be a preliminary plan and kind of a research project for the department to do as to what to be developed or should be developed in the future. So that would be fine.
Okay.
And
I think that would be preferable just because of the time and the dedication it would take to adopt administrative rules to conduct research.
Right.
And the research is ongoing currently, actually. It started here a few months back, maybe 6 or so months ago.
The other question I have for you, you mentioned something about it only applying to, you said nursing facilities?
Yeah, so as it's written, subsection 1 of 1, create a database registry, you know, for the record of reports of abuse made under ORS 441640. Uh-huh. So I assume we wanted to include ORS 124, whatever the section is for it.
I didn't have that understanding. I thought it was going to be limited to reports of abuse made under that chapter only.
Just for nursing facilities? Well, the way the department is approaching it is more broad anyway, the way they're currently doing the research, the way they would be looking at...
These are long-term care facilities.
Well, it's long-term care facilities, but the definition in this section of 441 is specific to nursing facilities. It even explicitly excludes the other long-term care facilities.
We have two elder abuse definitions, one pertaining to nursing homes and one pertaining to the other facilities that are sometimes in jargon also called long-term care facilities, which includes adult foster homes, assisted living facilities, residential care facilities. Mm-hmm. So I think the intent was to bring those into this project as well. And so it'd be a pretty simple fix. It'd just be to add 124050 in addition to 441640.
Okay. So for those on the phone, basically the discussion is whether or not this covers only long-term care facilities but or also group homes, and it seems like it's an oversight not to include the group homes, right? Okay. So that would be a change.
Wonderful.
I think everyone would be fine with.
Okay. And then further in Section 1, subsections 2, 3, and 4 on page 2. And I'm curious, Joe, if you had a chance to look at this, but those are, you know, mandates to develop procedures and protocols that are actually already in place for the way abuse investigations occur. I don't know if you felt any different about that, Joe. But I know in our subgroup discussions, and not that I should be here at the table, you know, saying DHS wants more mandates, but we had talked about the timelines, a mandate to study and research, you know, the timelines for invest. I didn't see that in the LC, and I was wondering if maybe that's what was intended by these subsections.
So the one element that I saw missing was that we had consensus over was some sort of mandatory timeline for the completion of an investigation by the department. And, you know, the number I had thrown out was 90 days from the time of the report.
I received an email saying there was no further information on that and to not include that in the LC.
Okay.
So maybe that would be changed now, and I'd be happy to put it back in.
And that's what I wasn't sure if we just decided maybe for the work group to continue that discussion rather than.
Yeah, I think that's one of the more important things that we can do is actually set a period of time that an investigation needs to happen within, because the longer it goes that an investigation is open, the harder it is to either, you know, prosecute someone who's who's abusing an elder or clear someone's name who isn't guilty.
Yeah.
So. Why did we pull that out?
Well, this is Lindsay with the House Majority Office. My understanding was that we didn't have enough information on the timeline, that it was sort of an element that we discussed. We need a better framework for it and a timeline, but that because we couldn't come to anything, that's why I took it completely out.
So okay. Should we put 90 days in there just as a, and then go back to the department to say, is 90 days adequate? And if not, why not?
Well,
is that?
I guess what I was wondering, I mean, we could do that, but I would definitely get, I mean, there'd be a fiscal on it, and we can do that. The alternative was what I thought I was going to be seeing coming in to this LC was a mandate to DHS, like the technologies, but to study it, to come back in January 2015 with, you know, or before then, with a recommendation on what is feasible to shorten the current timelines, and then what resources might be needed to do that. In part because that recommendation is going to go hand in hand with the technology improvements.
Yeah. I mean, just a counterpoint. Like, what point does DHS actually have to put their feet in the fire, though? I mean, we have investigations. You got a ton of new FTE, which everybody was super supportive of and thrilled about. Should we have E, which everybody was super supportive of and thrilled about?